Hey everybody, I am back. It is time for season 2 of the Curiosity Chronicles. I'm very excited to get into this. Needed to take a month off. Holidays were busy. Just didn't have the time to squeeze in the research and recording. So, push it out a month. Built the suspense for season 2. Hopefully season 2 lives up. We are going to jump in with something called the Dyatlov Pass Incident. It is a kind of spooky story. We're going to talk about some conspiracy theories. I'm going to tell you what happened. I'm going to give you my take, and hopefully by the end of this, you're educated and maybe even a little freaked out. So this is the Curiosity Chronicles. My name is Brett Bylsma. I am your host, and this is what I was curious about this month. So some housekeeping things. I am definitely going to mispronounce words in this episode, specifically names. I'm not a Russian speaker. I've read a lot of spy books that had Russian names in it, but I can say them in my head, but I can't actually speak them with my mouth. So I'm going to do my best. And if I sound like an idiot, it's because I kind of am. And that goes for the actual name of this episode too, Dyatlov Pass. That is how I believe it's supposed to be pronounced based on the pronunciation that I Googled. But I'll probably mix in some other, you know, different sounding words that sound kind of right because my mouth doesn't always do exactly what I intend it to do. So I try, but here we are. So anyway, let's get into the episode. What is the Dyatlov Pass incident? It went down in January and February of 1959. It was in the Soviet Union, specifically in the Ural Mountains of the Soviet Union, a harsh and unforgiving place. There were 9 hikers. Now, they were hiking at the time in an unnamed pass, but it has its name now because the leader of this hiking expedition was a man named Igor Alexeyevich Dyatlov. It's named after him. And they were heading out on an expedition, a hiking expedition, to reach a certain mountain in the Ural Mountains in the Soviet Union. They were all experienced hikers. This was not an amateur expedition. All of them were experienced hikers, snowshoers, cross-country skiers. They knew how to survive and thrive in harsh conditions in the wild. They were heading out, and the goal was to get to this certain peak, and then when they finished their hike, they were going to telegram Dyatlov's sports club to let them know that they were okay. They were never seen alive again. So what happened? It's a mystery. It's still not been solved. It is a mystery that has lasted since 1959. Lots of theories out there, but nobody has definitively solved this case. So how did they go from being a group of 9 experienced, young, in-shape hikers to 9 dead bodies frozen in the snow? Let's find out. So late January 1959, I believe on January 27, the expedition started to head out for the Ural Mountains. At the time, it was an expedition of 10, but after the first day, a hiker due to health issues and congenital heart defect was not able to continue with the strenuous hike, had to turn back. So 9 continued on. Again, we do not know exactly what happened because all 9 of them end up dead. But investigators found cameras and diaries from the group, and they're able to piece together a rough timeline. So February 1, so a few days into the hike, the hikers were trying to make their way through, at the time, the unnamed pass, what we now know as the Dyatlov Pass. And it was leading to, and forgive me, I don't know how to pronounce this one, Otortin. It's a mountain in the Ural Range, the northern Ural Range. Unfortunately, bad snowstorms had caused really poor visibility, and the team actually had lost their way a little bit. So they didn't head towards Otortin, but instead they went a little bit west and ended up on the slope of a different mountain. This is all on February 1. Now, and this is like where things start to get like spooky. This story, regardless of what actually happened, is just, it's spooky. The mountain that they happened to be camping on the slope of, in the language of the indigenous Mansi people, I think that's M-A-N-S-I, Mansi. It's an indigenous people in that area of Russia. They called that mountain Kolat Sayakal or something, which means dead mountain. If you know what's coming next, that is really creepy. And if you don't know what's coming after I tell you about it, remember that they are literally camped on the slopes of dead mountain. Okay, so weird. They make camp. Nobody hears from them in quite some time. Remember, they were supposed to telegram and let the sports club know that they were back. Finally, on February 20, after nobody has heard from them, which seems, incidentally, like an extremely long period of time for them to go without a search party. But on February 20, a search party of volunteers finally decides, hey, we better go out and try to find these people. And they found the campsite. There was no people there when they found it. But they did find some pretty ridiculous sites. Campsite was found, but there's no hikers. So they immediately called in military and police investigators. And this is where the mystery really starts ramping up. Because the investigators found the campsite was nearly destroyed. The tent was slashed open and destroyed and partially covered in snow. But the crazy part was, after investigation, it was cut from the inside out. So the hikers slashed their way out of the tent. Why? Nobody knows. Most of the belongings had been left at the campsite, including shoes. No hikers, but they had left their shoes. There were footprints found, many made by bare feet or people in socks, or some of them were one shoe on, one shoe off. So strange. Cut from the inside out. And all nine hikers took off in different directions, severely underdressed. Keep in mind, this is the northern Ural Mountains in Soviet Union. It was sub-zero temperatures. Volunteer searchers started to look around the area surrounding the destroyed campsite, see what they could find, who they could find. They began searching near a large cedar tree that was at the edge of the forest near the campsite. And that's where they found the first two bodies. Yuri Krivanchenko, who's 23 years old, and Yuri Doroshenko, 21. On the night of their death, the temperature was between negative 13 and negative 22 degrees Fahrenheit. But both men were found shoeless and wearing only long underwear. And then after that, investigators found three bodies. Now, these bodies had been at the cedar tree where they found the other two bodies, but they were on their way back to the camp when they succumbed. That was the bodies of Dyatlov, the leader of the expedition, a person named Zinaida Kolmogorova, I am butchering these, and Rustem Slobodin. Rustin was 23 and Zinaida was 22. Now, so far, it's a strange situation, but the cause of death seemed pretty self-explanatory. The five bodies, they found five so far, had died of hypothermia, which makes complete sense. What doesn't make sense is why they weren't in shelter, but we'll get to that. But there were some strange inconsistencies. Now, I keep saying researchers because I did the research, but the investigators, they said it was clear-cut hypothermia, but there were some strange inconsistencies, and that is what leads to a lot of conspiracy theories, of course, because in the report, it was said that Doroshenko was brown/purple in complexion and had a gray foam coming from his right cheek and gray liquid coming from his mouth. Which is gross. but also what is it? That's not a hypothermic reaction. That's not a symptom of hypothermia. So what is this foam coming from his mouth? Two of the hikers that they had found under the cedar tree were, or that had been at the cedar tree when they're alive, and then they were walking back to the campsite when they finally succumbed. Two of them, their hands were badly scraped, and the branches above them were torn down as if they were trying to climb these small branches that couldn't support them, and they scraped up their hands in the process. Obvious question being, why did they need to get in the tree? Trees don't save you from cold weather. On top of that, Slobodin had head injuries that were consistent with someone falling over and hitting their head multiple times, and Kolmogorova had a baton-shaped bruise on her side. All of them were underdressed. Some of them were even wearing other hikers' clothes. There was just a mishmash. Now, the question is always, why were they leaving the campsite underdressed? And what caused these injuries? What were they trying to hide from? Or get away from? The questions just keep coming. And for a while, this is how it stayed. This was the status quo. It wasn't for two more months that the rest of the bodies were found. And again, it did not lead investigators to any type of solution. The more that they found, the more questions and uncertainty seemed to arise. 2 months later, 75 meters deeper into the woods and buried in snow in a ravine, they found the bodies of Nikolai Thibault Brignoles. I'm just making that one up. He's 23 years old. Ludmila Dumanina, 20 years old, and Semyon Zolotaryov, 38 years old. And then lastly, Alexander Kolovatov, 24 years old. Now, here's the difference in these bodies. Nikolai, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name again. Nikolai had suffered significant skull damage, and it was determined that the skull damage happened shortly before his death. Semyon Zolotaryov is 38, the oldest member of the expedition, had major chest fractures, and it was determined that a fracture in the chest of this magnitude had to be from a force consistent with that of a car crash. And they also found similar chest fractures on Ludmila Dubinina. So two of the hikers found in this location. So a massive amount of force injured them. Dubinina was, and this is gross, was also missing her tongue, her eyes, parts of her lips, as well as facial tissue and some bones of her skull. So that is pretty messed up. Kolovatov was found in the same location, but not with any severe wounds. So just hypothermic shock is what killed him. Adding to the mystery of these four bodies, the clothes of Kolovatov and Dubinina showed evidence of being radioactive. Not strongly radioactive, but there was a trace. So, what is going on at the Dyatlov Pass? That's what people have been asking since 1959. So, let's talk about it. What has come up officially and unofficially? It's still unofficially unsolved. Nobody's satisfied with the answers that they received. Soviet officials first suspected an attack by the indigenous Mansai tribesmen, but that was dismissed because of lack of evidence and that the Mansai people were always peaceful, at least historically. So what did happen was the Soviet investigators basically said they died of hypothermia and the case was closed. They blamed it on natural events. Closed the case. And that is what has led to a lot of different theories and conspiracy theories. I mean, this is Soviet Union. everything they did was clandestine, so you can understand why a quickly closed case with suspicious circumstances was a breeding ground for conspiracy theories. Now, I don't believe in conspiracy theories, but even this one makes me a little bit suspicious. Not gonna lie. But I'm gonna go through the different theories, both natural and conspiratorial, and then at the end, I'll kind of give my take on what I believe happened. I am no expert. I spent a month looking at this. People have been investigating this for years. But based on me being the host, it's my prerogative to give my take. So anyway, first theory that popped up was understandable. People thought avalanche. It had to be an avalanche. They're in the mountains. It was very snowy. It's very cold. There were warning sounds. Hikers had to get out, and they had to get out quick. They couldn't wait to go one at a time out the opening of the tent, so they cut their way out, and they took off running. Didn't have time to put on clothes or even their shoes. Which makes sense, and seems the most plausible. But there were some people who had blowback against the avalanche theory. For one thing, it was thought that an avalanche, even as powerful as they are, is not consistent with the type of injuries that you would see, that they did see on the bodies, the chest fractures specifically. And this wasn't a likely place for an avalanche. There has never been a reported avalanche, if I remember correctly, before or since the Dyatlov Pass incident in the Dyatlov Pass. So highly unlikely to even experience an avalanche here, mostly because of the grade of the slope. It wasn't deemed a steep enough grade for an avalanche to occur. There was, according to the reports, no damage to the tree line or other debris showing evidence of an avalanche. And the footprints of the hikers leaving the campsite were not consistent with hikers in a hurry, running or fleeing from a life-threatening event. They were consistent with people walking. I would not be walking away from an avalanche. I'd be running. So a lot of people do not believe that the avalanche theory pans out. So then you got conspiracy theories. There was and I'm not going to spend a huge ton of time on these. I'm going to go through, and a lot of them aren't worth the research, and some of them, the evidence is what I'd say, and the rest of it is a lot of hearsay, so there's not really a lot of stuff to talk about. So one of the conspiracy theories is that there was an argument among the group. There were some romantic entanglements throughout the group, so the first theory is that some sort of fight broke out over love or lust, and they, you know, had a scuffle, and then they started running away from each other because everybody was very angry. Doesn't stand up to scrutiny when you actually really look at it. First off, everybody that was familiar with this group said they were on extremely friendly terms, and that any type of romantic entanglement wasn't really an entanglement at all. They looked past it. Everybody got along. On top of that, the injuries that were inflicted from the blunt trauma were beyond human capacity to inflict. There's no man strong enough, or woman strong enough, to inflict the fractures on the magnitude that were on the hikers that were found in the ravine. So, romantic entanglements, pretty much out. This is where you start getting real fun. Some people think it was a Menk. That's a Russian Yeti. Or the Abominable Snowman. Or Sasquatch. Those are all somewhat related in mythology. I think it's mythology. I know there are some people in the Pacific Northwest of the United States who really would not think it's mythology. But I'm not one of them. I don't really need to talk about this one later. I clearly do not think it was a Menk. But could you imagine? Hokey smokes. That would be, if you ever found true evidence of that, I would be blown away. But man, that would be some scary stuff. You'd never find me hiking in Russia ever again. More conspiracy theories. A secret radioactive weapon. They are proponents of this. I'm trying not to give my thoughts on each theory because I'm going to get to that later. But some of them I just can't help myself. There was secret government testing, or so people said. And sometimes I think people hope because it's Russia. I know that sounds kind of morbid, but that's... I think people want Russia to be involved in conspiracies, at least in the United States. I don't have any listeners from Russia yet, so I'm not worried about them hearing that. I digress. The theory holds that there was secret government testing in this area of the Dyatlov Pass, and that this secret radioactive weapon is what caused the Dyatlov Pass incident. But it doesn't really hold up. Couldn't have been a radioactive weapon. Only two of the bodies, and it wasn't even the bodies actually, it was the clothes on the bodies, showed evidence of radioactivity. It was not nearly enough to kill anybody. So then people start talking, well, maybe it wasn't a radioactive weapon, maybe there was a secret explosive weapon. And the reasoning behind this one is about 50 kilometers away, there was a different group of hikers, supposedly on that same night. And they said they saw strange orbs, orange-colored orbs, floating in the sky. And they determined later that those orbs would have been around where the Dyatlov hikers were. And they say they heard dissonant explosions. So the hypothesis says that... Hypothesis, that makes it sound legitimate. The theory goes that the nearby explosions caused panic in the Dyatlov Pass hikers, and they took off running, where two of the groups, died of hypothermia. And then the theory says that the other group that showed the more massive injuries were actually caught by the explosion of these experimental weapon and killed by said explosion. In 1990, the chief investigator of the Dyatlov Pass incident said that he suspected the bright spheres had a direct connection to the group's death, but USSR secrecy and censorship had caused him to abandon that line of inquiry. So that's interesting that the chief inquirer said something like that. Lends credence to that theory. It's not something you can just discount. I did not dig much more into that interview, but like he said, he basically had to abandon that line of thought. So there wasn't much more to dive into, unfortunately. That would have been interesting. There was one other strange theory that sounded even a little bit plausible. Something called infrasound. It is a rare weather event caused by particular wind patterns that can cause panic attacks in humans. It's like a vibration, or some people have referred to it as like an earthquake inside of you. Apparently, this area of the Dyatlov Pass could have produced those types of wind patterns, so there could have been this panic attack, and they just fled, taken off, died of hypothermia, but it doesn't explain the injuries. So that's where that one a little bit falls apart. Some people say maybe the injuries were caused by the fall into the ravine, but yeah, they were, only two of them were found with massive injuries. So again, that doesn't quite hold water. So infrasound, maybe. Official investigation, as I said that a compelling natural force caused deaths and the case was closed. It was reopened in 2019, again by now Russian officials, and quickly investigated and closed again as hypothermia after an avalanche. So the two official solutions determined that natural events caused it. So my take, what do I think happened? Well, what do I think did not happen is Yetis. I don't think a Menk exists. And even if I could get beyond that. And okay, maybe it was that. There was no prints of a large animal. There's no scat. There's no evidence at all of an animal of any kind. So clearly, that's a ridiculous theory. The UFO or secret weapon thing, I didn't mention UFOs, but some people think that the orange orbs were not a secret Soviet weapon, but UFOs. So that does seem suspicious that there were lights in the sky near where this apparently violent death happened. But when you actually look into it more, the timelines don't seem to jive. The group that saw the orange orbs, it was later determined that that was not from the same night that it is suspected the Dyatlov Pass hikers died. And actually, it's not really suspected. Based on the diaries, they can pretty much determine it was on February 1 or very near that. So does not jive. The hikers that saw the orange orbs were actually seen. They were actually seeing lights from a documented missile test. So it was a weapon test, but it was a documented and well-known missile test, and it was not on the same night that the Dyatlov Pass hikers died. So a secret weapon, throwing that one out. Now, some people say maybe it was the military, you know, the military of the Soviet Union, this very secretive and brutal state. And I think that's what it comes down to. I think people want there to be a conspiracy theory, especially in the United States. Russia is always the big baddie. And I think people just want to have this picture of them as these secretive and ruthless cold warriors. And so you get more conspiracy theories, I believe, with these countries that are more secretive. I think military intervention is more likely than UFOs and Yetis, obviously. But the theory is that the Dyatlov Pass, they stumbled onto something they shouldn't have seen and then were killed by the military, and they covered it up by, you know, making it look like a natural disaster. And my take on that is, I mean, this is 1959 Soviet Union. This is the Soviet Union at its most ruthless. If they wanted to get rid of somebody who stumbled onto something they shouldn't have seen, they just make him disappear. And nobody would ask questions. You can make the case that, oh, well, if they just disappear, then people start asking questions about what they saw. But if that was the case, all the investigators that went out there, because the volunteers went first, keep that in mind. It was not the military or the police investigation that went out there first. It was volunteers. They would have seen whatever the hikers saw, and then they would have had to have been killed too, but they weren't. So I think that the military killing the hikers is more of a psychological reaction to USSR secrecy and brutality as opposed to actual evidential theory. So what do I think actually happened? This is where it gets a little bit boring. I did this with D.B. Cooper too. It's like the boringest solution is what I think is the most likely. But for me, it comes down to Occam's razor. Simplest explanation is usually correct. If you hear hoofbeats, you think horse, not zebra. So, hypothermia is obviously part of this case. They died of hypothermia. Almost all of them did. Now, hypothermia can cause irrational thinking, like the belief that you are overheating despite the fact that you're actually freezing to death. So could have led to why they had no clothes on. But the injuries are not explained by hypothermia. And why did they run away from the tent anyway? So hypothermia by itself doesn't do enough to explain what happened. But I think an avalanche does. I know that's the boring official version, but to me, it is the only thing that makes sense. The only thing that makes sense, unless I suspend my belief and go supernatural, honestly. I don't believe in the supernatural the way that, you know, people in the world do. I don't believe in, yeah, just those out there theories that seem like the only explanation. So I had to go with avalanche. And it was so boring. That just is the only logical explanation to me. Now, I know that there was the things I said earlier. People think that an avalanche couldn't have occurred here and that it didn't hold up to the injuries. The injuries were consistent with a more massive force, which is crazy to think about. Avalanches are incredibly powerful. But there was a team of scientists recently that, using simulations, computer models, were able to prove that an avalanche was the most likely cause of the Dyatlov Pass. And they would think it was something called a slab avalanche. And it is believed that there's a certain degree of slope that a mountain can have before a slope or slab avalanche can occur. And opponents of this theory of avalanche at the Dyatlov Pass say that the slope of the Dyatlov Pass is not steep enough. But the computer simulation proved two things. One, the slope is actually steeper than opponents originally thought. And two, it is sloped enough to, in certain cases, be steep enough to cause a slab avalanche. So there goes that point A of the opponents. It is steep enough to cause an avalanche. It could happen here. It's not impossible. Now, a slab avalanche is when a slab of snow close to the surface breaks away from deeper layers and slides downhill. As it slides downhill, it breaks into blocky chunks. Now, think about a large chunk of ice traveling at extreme speeds down a mountain. If that hits you, that's going to cause some damage. And it was proven with the computer simulation that if the hikers were lying down or sleeping and one of these blocky chunks from the slab avalanche hit them, that it could cause the injuries that were observed, the injuries that were consistent with the force of a car crash. Very traumatic. It was proven that that could happen in an avalanche. And it explains the rapid fleeing. There's two different things to think about. A, it could have been that they were actually caught in the avalanche and they were, you know, hit with these chunks and then later dug their way out and started running. Seems less believable. What I think is more believable is that they heard the sound, the rumbling of the avalanche, terrified, they cut their way out of the tent, started running. Some of them were trying to climb the tree to get above the height of the incoming blocks. And some of them were caught in the avalanche, knocked down, hit with the blocks, had massive injuries, and then managed to stumble their way until they fell into the ravine. The ones that were not caught in the avalanche, couldn't get back to the tent in time, died of hypothermia. It's the only explanation I can see that explains all of the strange circumstances of this case. The panic, the rapid fleeing without getting dressed, and the massive injuries. But there's still a part of me that's like, there's still things that aren't explained. Is it true that the footprints show that they were walking instead of running? That doesn't make any sense. So either that has to be faulty investigative work, which I'm not going to accuse anybody of, or it has to be an unanswered question. Maybe they were injured and they were only able to walk. They could not run. But not all of them were injured. And wouldn't there be blood in the snow? There's all these questions. I can't answer them. And it a little bit drives me crazy. I'm not going to lie. A little bit OCD. I don't listen to true crime podcasts unless they actually solve the case, because otherwise it drives me bonkers. And in my brain, logically, I'm like, yes, it was an avalanche. I am not a conspiracy theorist. I don't believe in the supernatural. I believe in the simplest explanation is probably the correct explanation. But man, there's just enough where I'm like, what if? What if something weird's going on? What if the Soviet Union was taking out its own citizens because they saw too much? Like, what if? We'll never know. That's it for today. It's good to be back. I'm excited. I'm ready to move into 2022 with some high quality stuff. But I can't tell you what's coming next because I don't know yet. I don't know yet. I was thinking about doing a Watergate episode, but boy, that's a lot of research. I'm not sure I could get it done in a month. So I'm up in the air. Maybe I'll do some Wild West. Maybe I'll do some early America. Maybe I'll do modern American history or something totally different. Who knows? The people that tune in next time to the Curiosity Chronicles. Until then, my name is Brett Bielsma. I am your host, and I hope that you stay curious.